incredible fury.
I got something for you.
What? A guitar pick. But won't I get DQ'd if I use this in the ring?
It's not for that. It's just a little heavy metal good luck.
Rock on! Thank you!
Listen, just go out there and show Gloria Glitter what rock and roll is all about.
That's what I intend to do!
You're the worst.
You know what? We all have our 15 minutes of fame, and I'd like to take a couple of my 15 minutes to talk about the rights and the wrongs in the world of professional wrestling.
And it is for the WWE Championship.
This match is for the ECW World Heavyweight Championship.
Just when I think that the improvements are rolling in and everything will be as it should, WOW does something like this and yanks the rug out from underneath me. I guess I shouldn't be surprised. The title of this should be Return to Cartoon Land, but it wasn't. It was Leader of the Pack is the actual title of the episode. It was episode 73. Season count is 221, and the air date was February 3rd, 2024. I am your host, Mr. Green. Thank you for tuning in, and this is the review of WOW Superheroes. Of course, we will get to that and its various little components of the show as I move along. But of course, I want to address a few things before we get there. There is wrestling news, but before I do go any further, I do want to say this one thing, because there's going to be a little bit of a difference here in how this episode is presented. There's something that I want to make a visual aid on at the end of the, close to the end of the show, when I start discussing the main event. That's going to be the last call, the team of the last call versus the Tonga Twins. If you are listening to this on audio podcasts, for wherever you happen to find that, and by the way, you know, you can subscribe on greater podcast outlets and platforms, you are going to have to listen to the description of what I'm talking about. I will try to be as descriptive as I can. If you are on YouTube, however, I will be incorporating the video of what I'm talking about so you can see the comparison. I don't do that very often, but on this part, I will have the video clip available for you to look at. It's a brief thing. I may have it on a loop so you can see it, you know, over and really understand what I'm saying, but it will be there. And of course, I try my best to break off the episodes into chapters so that you are not stuck having to go through the whole thing. You can go through one chapter at a time, and you can find what you're looking for. So just so you are aware, when we get to that point, there's going to be a slight change in the presentation. But let's, before I get riled up and agitated at WOW, let's go into what wrestling news may exist in the world of women's wrestling, shall we? So, one of the big things that's been going on today, and this is not a purely women's wrestling bit of news, by the way, but it does affect some women's wrestling, because there has been a, I guess there's no nice way to say it. I was going to try to find a nice way to say termination, but all I have is termination here. Unfortunately, the former president of TNA Wrestling, the newly rebranded TNA Wrestling, Scott D'Amore, has been terminated. Now, this is relatively new news as I am recording this, so there's not a lot of information based on why the termination took place. However, the latest news seemed to imply, and I will use the words imply, that some heads in Anthem Entertainment, which is the president, is the presiding company over Impact, they own it. But it appears that creatively, at least allegedly, creatively, they do not agree with the direction that Mr. Scott D'Amore has presented. Now, I'm hoping that this is just a butting of the heads. I mean, certainly we don't want to wish anybody termination or losing their job or anything like that. I hope he has something to do with the company. Because just because you're bumped out of being the president does not necessarily mean that you're gone from the company altogether. Although my gut would tell me that he's probably not going to be there. But in any case, the story had been that he made the attempt to purchase outright TNA Wrestling from Anthem Entertainment, allegedly putting together, you know, a financial plan and getting backers so that they could get, or he could get a hold of TNA Wrestling and continue on from that point. Assumably, and I say assumably, to not terminate the relationship that they have with Anthem, I would guess that he would have wanted to have stayed on Access TV because that is their TV outlet right now. Good, bad, or indifferent, that is their television outlet. But that was the report, that there had been effort by D'Amore to try and purchase the company, and apparently that did not go over. I don't know if that was the reason that they decided to part ways. But it has been presented that he has been terminated and they've already appointed a new replacement. PWInsider.com found this out, and they had been checking this story over the course of the week, again as I am recording this, and they have confirmed, and this is coming out of, again, PW Insider, but I think the actual source preceding that would be Fightful.com and from Sean Ross Sapp, that Anthony Ciccione, I hope I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, is now the president of TNA Wrestling, and he will be replacing Scott D'Amore. I will read some of the press release that has gone out for that. Anthony Ciccione named president of TNA Wrestling, Anthony Sports and Entertainment Incorporated, a global multi-platform media company, announced today the appointment of Anthony Ciccione as the president of TNA Wrestling. The move aims to further integrate TNA Wrestling into Anthem's entertainment group, of which Ciccione is the president, leveraging the entire company's resources to add more value in areas including production, distribution, marketing, viewership, customer acquisition, digital revenue streams, ad sales and sponsorships, digital tech operations, and more. Ciccione replaces Scott D'Amore, whose contract with Anthem has been terminated. D'Amore has been a part of TNA since 2003. He held many key leadership positions and played a vital role in the growth of the company, leading to its strong industry reputation today, including the successful return of TNA Wrestling brand in 2024. Anthem thanks him for the commitment he brought to the business, the talent, and the people who work outside of the ring. In addition to these duties as president of entertainment, Ciccione will now manage the day-to-day business operations for TNA Wrestling. He brings more than 30 years of executive-level management experience to the organization. Ciccione has been with Anthem for the last 16 years, managing technical operations, multiple cable and digital channels. Prior to his time at Anthem, Ciccione was a producer of sports content, including catapulting the Score to success by bringing WWE to the channel. That was the press release, and it sounds like this gentleman has a lot of experience, but the one thing that I did not read within any of that was him having any experience as a creative. I don't know if I like this change. I am not sure if I like this yet. Especially considering the last month or so, I have been praising Tina. I was like, this is really becoming good. Like, the creative has been on point. It had drawn me in. The shows have been good. And I don't expect to see a change immediately. But this is everything that I've said in multiple conversations about different things, WOW included. That sometimes all it takes is a change of staff to start throwing a monkey wrench in your plans. Sometimes that's all it takes. Just a change in staff and somebody else like, ah, you know, this isn't what I want to do. I don't see, unless, and again, I'm going to be clear, unless there's something else underlined that they have not released that Scott D'Amore did, and I hope that's not the case, I see no reason to have replaced him, especially now when he was attempting to bring TNA wrestling on the upswing. As I just said, reading this press release, this gentleman, CCON, looks like he has a lot of experience in television and probably will do a great job on that end of the spectrum, getting them more viewership, trying to, you know, raise awareness, trying to make the brand of TNA wrestling outside of the ring a bigger deal. But if he's doing the day-to-day operations for TNA wrestling without any benefit of wrestling experience, I hope that he's a smart enough guy to realize that he's not a smart enough guy to be operating that version of it. So I'm not going to put the nail in the coffin yet. Too many people have done that with TNA wrestling / Impact Wrestling over the course of these 20 years that they've existed. But I will say that for the benefit of that company and the people that work for it, both in front of and behind the scenes, I hope that he's a smart enough guy to realize that he's probably not a smart enough guy to run the wrestling business day to day. Perhaps Scott D'Amore can be the chief creative or whatever the case may be, but I don't know if I would just lose him. But considering all of the tweets, because when this went down, a lot of the roster started tweeting their, for lack of a better term, condolences. I didn't want to say that because it's not dead, but, you know, they started tweeting, you know, their condolences towards the loss of that position. So hopefully this will not cause massive problems with the company. I really, really hope not. I have enjoyed TNA wrestling quite a bit for the last couple of months, really. So it's probably getting close to like 8 or 9 months. Oh, well, we will see. Also out there in the Russell sphere, former NWA Women's Champion Camille, who had been in discussions with the WWE, reportedly doesn't look like that's going to be a landing spot right now, or at least that's the thought. She's now been reported to be in deep discussion with AEW. This also comes for PW Insider, former NWA Women's Champion Camille, at this time, is no longer expected to be WWE bound. While there had been interest, and according to one WWE source in the past, had been offered an NXT deal, discussions are not moving forward. And outside of that release or outside of that statement, the note was put at the bottom. Camille was recently backstage at an AEW show. I don't know if AEW is the best place for a Camille right now. I appreciate that AEW is there and still around, and it is a very important cog in the wrestling universe. I don't ever want to take that away from them. They are very important to exist, even if it's badly run. And I do believe that it's badly run. But there are going to be people who get into the wrestling business who just will not get to the WWE. That's just a fact. Everybody cannot go to the WWE. I don't care what their dreams are. Some people need a different place to land. And maybe going to those different places will facilitate a different change for him. I just don't know if AEW is a good place for her. That I am not impressed with their women's division. I'm still not sure why they have two different women's championships, quite honestly. It seems to dilute their roster, and some of the people just don't seem to be doing anything. It's just, never mind the fact that there's a third women's championship if you include Ring of Honor. But her style has not really lent itself to what AEW looks for. You know, the banger match, which is all that's pretty much what it's been. Now, they could put her into the what the former Jade Cargill spot was, just the ass kicker, somebody that goes in there and destroys whoever's in front of them until they find somebody to beat her, which is basically what she did when she was in the NWA. Ran for a long time, a very long running champion for that matter. But time will tell. I do not know if she should go there. I personally do not think so. It's probably the best money that she's going to get outside of WWE. Well, I'm not even going to say probably. It is the best money that she's going to get outside of WWE. But we will have to keep our eyes open and check out what happens with her in that. I hope that wherever she lands, it is a good fit for her. That is pretty much, you know, the best I can give for Camille at this point. I like her work, but, you know, we'll see. It has been talked about. I don't think this is going to be any shock or any surprise that people have been saying that Mercedes Moné, the former Sasha Banks, is due to be in AEW in about 5 weeks. The reason that people say that is because the episode is a themed episode of AEW titled Big Business. Business in the S in business spelled with a dollar sign, or at least one of the three R. But in the graphic that they have, they also have Boston spelled with two S's, both of those S's in dollar signs, which would make that boss, which also would lean you back towards her days as Sasha Banks, because what was she known as? She was known as the boss. No one has solidly said that she is going to be there, or at least they have not confirmed that. There has been speculation, as far as I know. It's been all rumor. It's been rumors that have been led by little red herrings like this, but or little hints like this. But as far as we know, it is very likely that she's going to be there. I don't want to be the one to be like, yeah, she's going. She's going to be there. Tune in that day. I don't know that. My gut would tell me that she's probably very likely to show up. And what date does that fall on? They said 5 weeks from today. So it would be the March 13th show. And that's been set at, I don't know what the gardens that's up in Boston happens to be. I don't know the TD Garden. I don't know what that stands for. It's a bank. Imagine that. It's a bank. It's some bank. But yeah, they got that. And she should be there March 13th. Assumably. Like I said, I am not going to be the one to be like, yeah, tune in, guys. It's going to happen. I don't know. I'm just giving you what is reported and what is alleged at this point. You have other people that's pretty much saying that this is going to happen. Sean Ross Sapp says that this is going to happen. The tweet that they have posted from him is Mercedes Moné is headed to AEW and has been on their payroll for a while, which would be very shocking anyway. Fightful Select and Andrew Zarian have learned a lot more. How long the deal has been done, things that could have held it up, the WWE element and her future in Japan. That was tweeted out by Sean Ross Sapp. Let me go back up to the report that was presented on Fightful Select and by Andrew Zarian on the Mattman radio broadcast. So this is from them, not me. If you couldn't tell, Mercedes Moné is headed to All Elite Wrestling. Fightful Select and Andrew Zarian of Mattman Radio have learned more. The company announced a TD Garden episode of Dynamite, specially titled Big Business, which is to feature Mercedes, who has been on the company's payroll since at least early July. On December 29th, Fightful reported that WWE stated that while they had talks with Mercedes, those talks have fallen through, and the two sides couldn't come to terms, similar to what happened prior with AEW. However, talks continued with AEW, and we're told that an agreement was in place around that time, which is likely why WWE was open to admitting that their talks had ceased. There was consideration to announcing or debuting Mercedes, but instead, the decision to pass on that for the TD Garden was set. We've heard that several possibilities discussed, but that the February 7th show announcement and the March 13th show date have been set for several weeks. When Fightful reached out about the rumors that Mercedes could be highlighted as far back as New York's Grand Slam show, we were told Mercedes was nowhere near being ready in the ring at that point. This was also confirmed by New Japan Pro Wrestling sources when reports emerged that they were hoping to book Julia versus Mercedes. New Japan sources indicated that Mercedes was not cleared and had not actually resumed training, and instead posted older footage. A pretty big piece of news related to Fightful from New Japan sources is that they do expect to have the ability to continue to work with Mercedes, and told Fightful it has been discussed. So as far as the Mattman radio broadcast, Fightful Select, and Andrew Zarian, as far as they're concerned, this is a done deal. She's there. And it'll be there on March 13th. I am not going to co-sign on that. I don't know. Like I said, as far as I know, everything else that I've read and saw has been all kind of, we think she's going. And until I see AEW say that, I wouldn't believe it. But this is something that Tony Khan does and would do. I mean, he did it with Punk. And they sold that place out on the name, on the rumor that CM Punk was going to be in Chicago. And it seems like they're repeating the process here. We're going to drop a little hint here, drop a little hint there. So I'm not going to be at all surprised if she shows up. I just didn't want to, you know, put it out there like, oh yeah, this is it. This is over. It's done. She signed. I have no idea about that. The speculation is strong, and if I was going to put a percentage on it, I would say it's probably about 98% that this is going to happen. But it's still that two that bothers me. Anyway, Trinity Fatu teamed up with Jordynne Grace in the pre-taped match, which would be her final match in TNA, despite the fact that she is now currently in the WWE, so she's airing on TNA programming in a presented present, but it was taped past, and she's in the WWE. Did you follow all that? Good. Okay, so she teamed up with Jordynne Grace in the final match against Tasha Steelz and Savannah Evans. I haven't watched it yet, but I am looking forward to it. I will not let the departure and the untimely termination of Scott D'Amore ruin my growing love for TNA wrestling. I will keep giving it a shot. Keep looking at it and see if it maintains its oomph for me. And finally, Tam Nakano says she will be staying with Stardom. Now, for those of you who don't know, Stardom is a wrestling promotion, all female, out of Japan. And it looks like they have had a couple of people who were departing, well, both Stardom and New Japan Pro Wrestling, because they're owned by the same company. And as it is, we've had the Rainmaker already leave New Japan Pro Wrestling. And I think the concern had become, well, who's next? Who's going to leave? Who's going to leave Japan and try to test their wings and go out to the world and possibly go to AEW or possibly try to go to WWE, and, you know, Julia being one of those names as well. So here we have one of the stars of Stardom, and she has made it clear that she has no intention of leaving. This is the former World Stardom Champion. And we will go through her statement. Tam Nakano tells Tokyo Sports that she will be staying with Stardom. Her goal is to make it the best company in the world. She says she will protect Stardom because it's their fans that helped her get back. Nakano wants to repay them. Tam also adds that she is planning to return to the top of Stardom with the World of Stardom Championship back in her sights after having to relinquish the championship at the end of 20. They put this in wrong. It says at the end of 2024, so I don't know what time machine that they have. I'm sure they meant the end of 2023. So there we go. good on her. It's nice to see some people haven't lost all their talent. It's nice to see that they still are maintaining some star power in their companies. Rossi Ogawa has confirmed since his exit of Tokyo Sports that he will be starting a new promotion. So you may want to keep your eyes out on that. We've had several all-female promotions popping up, so he may decide that he's going to go in and create a new one. Who knows? We will keep our eyes open for that. And now that we've gone through the bulk of the wrestling news that I wanted to address, let us get into the WOW review, shall we? After a quick swig of my Quick Trip energy drink, we will go step by step. And let me just say before I even begin this review, this episode is like a strong D+ for me. I can't speak for everybody else. It may be a C, but a strong D+ maybe. And it's never the matches. Well, let me not say never. It's rarely the matches that cause me to feel this way. It is mostly the same problems that it's always had. It's continuity. It's lack of detail. It's things seemingly popping out of nowhere. It's all that good stuff. And in this case, overacting also. But I guess we'll pop through that bit by bit and we'll see. So the show opens with Last Call cutting a promo. They open up the show, challenging for the WOW Tag Team Championships again. This is a segment that has more wrestlers wandering out to the ring and making their own match. Now, this is not a WOW problem. This is a problem just across wrestling in general. Like, I just walk out with a microphone, and tonight I'll be taking on so-and-so. We will be doing this and that. I will first off admit, when I was attempting to watch this, they had other things that was going on at work that I really couldn't focus on it like I wanted to, so I had to come back home and wait till they uploaded this segment on YouTube so I could hear what they had to say, because I didn't understand it. I didn't understand how they got this match. I didn't understand what they said to accommodate this match. I didn't understand how they justified the match in WOW's management. But it didn't seem like any of those things happened. It was like it just happened. They just went out and said, we deserve a title match, and said some other stuff, and then Tonga came out and said, well, we beat you once, and we'll beat you again, and we'll beat you again, and we'll beat you again, and matter of fact, let's do it right now. I was like, so within the first 2 minutes of it, they already came out and buried verbally a Last Call, not because it was witty, but because they called out the truth. We've beaten you. We've beaten you 2 or 3 times already, clean. And tonight's not going to be any different. They told you that from the start of the show. So I'm like, I didn't get what they were doing, how Last Call got this shot, why they even gave them a shot. Why didn't they say, look, you already had it? Or at the very least, when we beat you this time, you're done. You know, add in the stipulation that we've already taken your challenge twice already. We've already beaten you twice already. So if we do this one more time, that's it. You're done. You, as long as we got the championships, we do not want to see you again. Or something. But none of that happened. And it just carried on. The Tonga Twins decide to charge the ring, and then Last Call scoots out. And, well, I was going to talk about their match, but I'll wait till I get to the match. Because the fact that they've wrestled against Last Call previously plays into the part of the match in the main event. But again, we'll get to that. Also, if I missed anything in this promo that they did, anything, please tell me. Please tell me if I missed anything in that promo that justified why they have a title shot beyond the fact that they just challenged for a title, which was the first thing that bothered me in this show. And I really hope that I'm wrong. But it's the first thing that bothered me in the show. I was like, well, what was the point in having a four-way match that, okay, we bumped off the people that actually won it, and that was fine. But if you could just walk out and say, hey, I want a title shot, and they accept, then what was the four-way match for in the first place? That was the first thing that bothered me. I was like, and you got these two, Wrecking Ball and Reina Del Rey, who have been clearly beaten by the Tonga Twins at least twice. We'll go with that, at least twice for the championships. They shouldn't even be in the running, but all it took was them to go out and say, we're the best team and we deserve a title shot, and then they got it. Simple as that. Why was there a four-way match to begin with if it's that simple to just demand and receive a championship match? All apparently on the same day, because within the logic of the show, they came out at the beginning of it, they challenged, and they got one in the main event. So apparently, David McClain does not book the show in advance, and the main event just occurs when it occurs. So anyhow, problem number one. Next segment, Tormenta and Las Banditas taking on the Mighty Mites and Keita Rush. Now, if you didn't see the show, you might be asking yourself, why are they taking on the Mighty Mites and the Trio? Well, by the way, this is the Trios tournament. Let's just make that clear. So getting back to it, you may be asking yourself, why are they taking on the Mighty Mites and Keita Rush? Weren't the Mighty Mites in the tournament already with Steffi Slays, and then they got bumped out in the first round? Correct. They did. The Mighty Mites got bumped out in the first round, tagging with the other member of the Bully Busters against Exile. But they're back again. And the first thing that the commentators try to do is justify this. More specifically, the first thing that David McClain tries to do is justify this. So this is where he goes into, like, well, this is what I was talking about, Nigel, when I said that the tournament was fluid and everybody could come in and this, that, and the other, and yada, yada, yada. This is stupid. I haven't had to say that about anything in a while for a while, but this is stupid. If you're going to have a tournament that, if you lose, you could just pop back into another bracket just because, without any rhyme, reason, or explanation, then this is not a tournament. That's all there is to that. This isn't a tournament. This is just a series of matches that happen to stack on top of each other. It might turn into a tournament beyond this point because they bumped off the Mighty Mites. Yes, spoiler, I don't think anybody was shocked about that. But why were they backing it in the first place? Why? They hire people constantly in WOW. Are you telling me that within the entirety of that roster, you couldn't find anybody else to fill out this spot? Nobody. Not the mother truckers and the third partner. Not the Fabulous Four. There's three of them in there. Not some of these random offshoots that they got sitting around in the back or doing nothing. Nobody else. But we have to reintroduce the Mighty Mites with a different partner because they were held back apparently by Steffi Slays. So we'll just take Keita Rush. That'll make the team better. What was the point of this? WOW has made me lose all faith in their ability to do any tournament right. They never not do this. Never. Every tournament that they've had, they've done something to this degree where somebody get put out of it, but they'll just show it right back up. How can I take it seriously? How can I take what they do seriously when they don't even do it? Like, I can't even get my mind into a point where it's, I'm going to suspend all disbelief and get involved with this when they do things like that. I mean, because if this tournament's so fluid and they lost, why don't they just say, well, we want a rematch. Let's just do it again. Because if there's no rules to it and you're just going to slide teams around or, you know, when it's convenient, then what is the point of a tournament to begin with? I didn't get it. Now, it's not anything against the match. The match was fine. This is probably the match that the Mighty Mites needed to be in when they got there. They needed to be, I said it from the get-go, they needed to be up there against somebody like Las Banditas who can give them a good match, bump around, do the flips, and work their style of a match and make them look good even in the loss. And that's pretty much what they did here. They made them look good despite the fact that they were going to lose. But ultimately, they were going to lose, so I didn't understand this. Like I said, it's not like they were some top-tier team. Why would you take the losers, letting them swap out a member, and then like, all right, well, they're just back into it? There is no such thing as a fluid tournament. Let's just go ahead and say that now. There's no such thing as that. It doesn't exist. It's just some term that David McClain made up to try to justify them doing tournaments badly. And they've done this since for 20 years. Their first tag team tournament, they did the same thing. We have a tag team tournament. Somebody gets put off. They'll find another partner. Then they get right back in it. The tag team tournament that they had this time, same thing. Somebody got into it twice. The gauntlet match that they never showed in full. Penelope Pink gets eliminated in what was listed as a qualifier. Then they turned around and they tried to justify. Well, you know, she pulled a wild card and Princess Ozzy got hurt. They do this all the time. Their tournaments suck because they can't maintain any sort of law and order to it. They can't maintain any rules. Their tournaments just suck. And they need to hear that. The tournaments suck. Once, just once, I would like to see them go through a tournament fine, but I don't think they can do it anymore. I have lost all faith in that. They've had 20 years to try to do a decent tournament of some description. They don't have one. Not one. The match, like I said, was fine, except they have these little points in there that look ridiculous. So there's a point in the match where I think it's Sugar. I don't know. The one that's in the yellow. Mustard. She's in the ring with Tormentor. She runs off into the ropes and then out reaches Sanchez and grabs her hair so Tormentor can go and make the tag. that in and of itself was the problem, but somehow she's acting like her hair just caught up in the ropes. Like she is unable to move. All she did, she being Sanchez, was grab her hair and pull her towards the ropes. And then it's like she's just tied up in it. She's stuck. She can't get free. I was like, okay. That is a ridiculous spot. Why didn't she just grab the hair and just hit the mat and not go anywhere? But, you know, it is what it is. They do what they do. And then they had a point in the match where all three members of Las Banditas, the Tormenta and Sanchez, they do a triple team move, and all three of them get ready to pin her, which I don't know what that was about. I mean, the referee's standing there frantically waving his arms around, the one that he always does, that just stands around and just kind of, hey, don't do that, stop it. Keita Rush did not really add anything to this match other than another body to get thrown around and beaten. Did she look like she belonged in the team? Yes, she did. I mean, they pretty much share the same visual look, Keita Rush and the Mighty Mites. Shorts, colors, cape. That's pretty much it. And the same thing that they had with Steffi Slays. Now, why Slays and Rush don't tag any longer, I don't know. Probably for the best. But still, either one of them could have been slotted in this, as evident by the fact that they got into it. But either one of them could have been slotted in this, and it felt fine, and it did. But they did not need to be back into this tournament. Wild should do better about mapping the tournaments out ahead of time so that they don't repeat competitors. Spice got into the ring at some point with Rivera, and it looks like the editors had to do some cutaways to give her time to get up the ropes, because it looked like it was an uncomfortable amount of time for her to try to get her footing, get herself up there so that she could do a hurricanrana on Rivera from the top rope. So even though she hit this hurricanrana, of course, we know that didn't do anything for them. It didn't get them to win. Rivera hit it, and she rolls immediately out of the ring. And then they cut off to some more fans chanting and yelling and screaming and whatnot. But immediately when you go back to the match, the crowd is mostly silent and not doing anything. So make of that what you will. Rush gets isolated inside the ring with Tormenta. She gets in a bite of scissors and tries to go for some submission hold. We don't know what it is because both Rivera and Sanchez get into the ring before it's too late, and they break it up. Sugar gets back in. They catch her in a standing double suplex to Sanchez and Rivera. It's beautifully executed. And then they set her up for Tormenta, who puts the nail in the coffin by coming off the top rope with the Meteora. Now, when she does this, Keita Rush is standing over there on the side. I understand why Spice is down, or at least I think it's Spice. Spice is down on the outside, so her being out of the way is one thing. But why Rush made no effort to get into that ring and stop them whatsoever is beyond me. I mean, she literally just stood there in the corner and watched them do this. Watch her come out of the top rope with a Meteora, her finish, and didn't do anything to try to prevent it. I mean, it would have, even if she failed in preventing it, it would have been nice to see her make the effort. Get in there, and she could have got cut off by one of them, but just get in there and do something instead of standing there looking. It makes the choice to have Keita Rush as a partner in this regard seem like a bad decision. After the match, they cut a promo. Sophia Lopez, Tormenta, Vivian Rivera, Sylvia Sanchez. They all get the microphone and they all say something. It is a serviceable promo. Just sounds good based on the energy. But once you get past that, it's like, what are they talking about? This is, it wasn't a promo about anything specific. I don't even think the promo had anything to do with the Trios tournament. It was just a vague, generic promo. We are the best. This is what we can do. We're going to beat everybody, and you just saw us win. You know, it was that. Tormenta said something in Spanish. Sanchez and Rivera spoke with a lot of fire, although they spoke very briefly. Honestly, the weakest of the four in this context was Lopez, the person who's supposed to be the mouthpiece. She didn't have the cadence or the energy that her charges had. I want her to have that. It just wasn't there. It sounded like she, and I get it. English is probably not her first language. So it sounded like there were points of that where she's on there and she, I don't want to say she's struggling, but it's not as smooth. It's cohesive and you can understand it. It's just not as smooth. Rivera, Sanchez, both of what they said smooth. Even when you listen to Tormenta, but she's speaking in her native language. You don't know what she's saying, but there's a confidence there. It sounds very smooth. Again, serviceable promo. Did it go anywhere? Did it mean anything? Did it talk about anybody? Did it say we're coming after the championship? Did it say this is a new start? Did it say we're coming after the trophy? None of that. It's just a promo for promo's sake. Listen, I am happy and elated that WOW has taken the extra effort to start cutting in promos, like I've begged in this podcast for them to do, you know, for some time. But I'm also now going to say everybody doesn't need a promo after the match. Every single person does not need a promo after, especially if they don't have anything to say. It'd been different if they had some instructions that I need you to say this to get this over so we can do such and such. Here is just promo for the sake of a promo. And none of them really had anything to say. It was just standard wrestling stuff. The next segment, Coach Campanelli is introduced to a new member of Team Spirit, Sasha Sparks. So Ariel Sky and Pep Riley bring her in, and Sasha Sparks basically just kisses up to Coach for the, you know, from being there. The first part of this is that they brought her in as a surprise. And Coach is standing around like, what is this? Who is this? Why am I supposed to be talking? Like, she's confused as to this situation. Sky and Pep Riley tell her that, well, you know, you told us that we need to have more, you know, initiative and whatever it is that they're trying to say. Basically, what they was getting at is that they took something that she said and like, oh, well, we need to, you know, help out and get more people. So they get Sasha Sparks, unbeknownst to Coach, essentially implying that the Trios team going into the tournament is now going to be Ariel Sky, Pep Riley, and Sasha Sparks, opposed to Coach. They want Coach, or they have suggested that the Coach stand outside and do what you do best, Coach. Coach leaves this not pleased. She walks out like, sounds like, you know, somebody's not listening to Coach's tips or whatever. My issue with this is another one of those things that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but I don't see why you would invite somebody in the middle of you being in a tournament, in a kayfabe universe. That's the first thing. Like, we're in the middle of a tournament, they just won, and now it's like, all right, well, we need another member. We haven't even made it to this goal yet. What are we talking about getting another member? We haven't even done the thing that we brought the third person in for. And speaking of that, we've only seen Pep Riley once and in a very limited environment. And we're already off to getting somebody else. Team Spirit is getting diluted. I actually had begun to like Coach to some degree. I don't like the pseudo heel persona that she does because it's not going anywhere. But this segment also makes me feel like, okay, they may be done with that because they just kind of let her walk out and moved on. Even after Sasha Sparks kissed her butt for a minute or two. I really wanted to be under and learn under you. They say you're so smart and so this and that, and, you know. So I am assuming, and I don't know at this point, I'm assuming that Team Spirit is probably going to get bumped out of the tournament because they have somebody else in there now. And that'll give Coach something to tell him, see, I told you, you listen to Coach. So in any case, we have gone from being a Three Stooges act with Team Spirit to quite possibly the Marx Brothers, but I'll have to see them do more ridiculous and silly stuff. And then we'll know. Or it could have turned into Ted Healy and his Stooges. They might have worked backwards. That's an old, old, old thing, kids. You'd have to do some research in the movies to know who Ted Healy is. Quick, I guess a brief bit of research there. The Three Stooges were called the Three Stooges because they were Stooges to him in the original version of the act. Once they got rid of him, they just went by the Three Stooges. So there you go. That's it in a nutshell. So in this scenario, Coach, I guess, would be Healy, and possibly Ariel Sky would be Moe, and then the other two could pick whichever Stooges they want to be. But yeah, this seems like this came out of nowhere. It's pointless. This would have made a lot more sense to me had they lost and felt like they needed to bolster the roster, opposed to just randomly throwing somebody in there. And hey, we got another member, so here's another member, so here we go. I was happy to move on from this. But I was even more happy to move on from the next segment. The next segment is Rebel Hayes at the bottom of the Wild Steps doing whatever it is that she's doing. And then up comes Fury. And she has got a gift for Rebel Hayes. This is a tale of two vastly different acting styles. You got Fury, who's trying to be calm as a cucumber over there and not really do all that much. But Rebel Hayes is overacting. She's an overacting beast. Just all off the walls. I mean, you talk about welcome back to cartoon land. Just look at her. So she's sitting there, and then Fury comes up, and she's like, hey, I have something for you. And she gives her a guitar pick. And this is like the greatest gift in the world for, if you going off of the reaction of a Rebel Hayes, you would have think she gave her a PlayStation 5 or something. So she's like, yeah, great. What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to use this? Or what did she say? She's like, well, won't I get disqualified if I use this? So let's pause that for a second. And we're talking in kayfabe universe here. But why would any sane human being look at a guitar pick and think that this was given to me so I could cheat? What am I supposed to do with a guitar pick? Outside of maybe cut somebody's forehead or maim them seriously, which I don't think anybody wants to do in a WoW universe. And by that, I mean like taking the pointy end or shoving it in somebody's eye or something, But again, it was like, why would that be the first thing that comes to your mind? A guitar pick. And I want you to use this to cheat. Come on. So anyway, no, Fury corrects us like, no, I'm just giving that to you for a little bit of heavy metal luck or whatever. And she's like, yeah, rock on. And she goes running off like a banshee in the night, screaming at the top of her lungs and doing whatever rock stars do. So this person who is so built on being independent is now basically morphing into a clone of a new heavy metal sister. And we know it's a matter of time before she's actually tagging with Fury. And the new heavy metal sisters are born. It is interesting to me, though. I find it fascinating that Fury, as good as she may be in the ring, she's been on a losing streak in a while. And she's going to be the one to walk up to her and give her a guitar pick for good luck. Like, you should be keeping that for yourself. She hadn't been able to buy a win lately. But I'm going to be the one to give this to you so you can wrestle better and win, which is actually what happened. So we go to the next match. As Rebel Hayes, I was getting my rock stars mixed up. As Rebel Hayes runs off and she gets into, you know, up the wild steps and gets into the arena so she can have the match with Gloria Glitter. Now, Glitter, I don't think anybody's going to, you know, have any complaint about her. She's very good at what she does. Not only is she good at what she does, she is committed to being Gloria Glitter, but she had that commitment before she got there. She was, you know, Dalila Doom is basically in WOW under a different name. She's not doing all that much different. She has a higher budget. They give her, you know, the mic and all that stuff. But outside of that, if you remove the, I don't even think she uses that mic. She comes out with like a little microphone headset thing. But if you remove that, other than those little things like that, she is Dalila Doom. Just a different name. So the match is good. Surprisingly good, I should say, because I do not think that Rebel Hayes has a lot of wrestling background. If more than three matches, I would be surprised. So there is, in fairness to her, there is some ability there to do what you need to do inside of a wrestling ring. She probably needs somebody like a Gloria Glitter to walk her through it. But she did well. And I didn't have any complaint about her bell to bell. I mean, there are some, I don't want to say questionable points. It's probably things I didn't agree with. I'm not going to say questionable. But, yeah, there's a few things that I didn't agree with necessarily. That little senton splash that she got, like, that seemed like an odd way to do it. I'm going to jump over you, land, and then kick my feet out. I'm like, well, why run in the first place? But, again, you know, that's neither here nor there. The important part of this is that Glitter, at a certain point in the match, gets up to the top rope to do a reverse elbow. Now, if you're on their social media, she had some name for it, implying that this was a big move, the Flexinator or something stupid. So she gets Rebel Hayes, pops her in the throat, rams her head to the turnbuckle. She's doing this while she's standing on the apron. Then she gets up to the top rope. She comes off with a back elbow. Now, of course, you know, she's a wrestler. She's supposed to go for the win after whatever it is that she's doing. And she did. She went for the win. She hit her with the elbow, got the cover, but she got it too close to the ropes, and she being Rebel Hayes, put her foot on the bottom rope. Gloria Glitter, for whatever reason, immediately assumes that she won. And I don't know why she would assume that, because it's not like the angle would have given you any reason to believe that she had won this. And let me explain, or let me present the other side of this. So what happened is she got it down, hit the elbow, went for the pin, got the cover. Hayes puts her foot on the bottom rope. The ref counts two, and then Gloria Glitter gets up like, yeah, I did it, I won. And then Rebel Hayes comes up and rolls her up, and then she gets the three count. Nothing wrong with that necessarily. But what probably should have happened is that she's come off the top rope, hit the elbow, get the pin. The ref should have counted three and then noticed that the foot was on the bottom rope and waved it off. tell the bell ringer, don't ring the bell. Is, you know, no. I made a mistake. And then while she's celebrating the win that she thinks she has, Rebel Hayes comes up and rolls her up, and then 1, 2, 3. Rather than making her look stupid and getting up after a 2 count and saying, yeah, I did it. It's not like you couldn't hear it or you couldn't see him count 2. Now, she did the best that she could do in this scenario because she got up and she walked away from both the ref and both Rebel Hayes in an effort to be blind to what's going on. But it would have helped if there actually was a 3 count, quite honestly. So Hayes gets it. She rolls her up, gets the pin, and then, bam, she scores her first victory in a while. And surprisingly, the fans erupt when she gets the win, and they cheer for her, and they chant. They've been chanting Rebel Hayes, and I don't know what these crazy faces that she's making when she's out there. That doesn't look like somebody who actually won. It just looked like somebody's going through some sort of angerism or whatever. So she gets that. She gets the win. She rolls off. And Glitter is in there like, ah, oh, I can't believe it. So it's amazing to me that this person who got this guitar pick for luck actually worked for her, but it didn't work for Fury at all. So maybe Rebel Hayes should be giving that guitar pick back to her. Maybe she can get a win now. The next segment there, and oh, by the way, I really, if somebody is ever there at one of those tapings and is willing to inform me of what's going on, please do. Because I am utterly and completely convinced that they are coaching that crowd to chant for Rebel Hayes. I can't imagine that they would be this high strung into her. And I don't want to discount this young lady. I don't want to, you know, make it like, oh, there's no way they could cheer for her. Of course there is. But maybe it's me. I just don't see how they could be that invested in this woman when they've only seen her like twice. They've only seen her twice. It's not like she's won, you know, and it's not like she has some big angle or something like that that would get you invested. It's just chant for Rebel Hayes. So if someone's there that can confirm that they are actually telling them, because I know there's somebody off on the side that's telling them to applaud and clap and cheer. I've seen that already. But if there's somebody that's specifically saying, cheer for Rebel Hayes, here you go, clap, you know, let me know. Because I'm almost certain that is it. I'm like 7 out of 10 certain that this is what's happening. Just my opinion. Anyhow, the next segment, Glitter is in the back room. She comes into, we'll just call it a green room area. And she sits down and she's encountered by Coach. So Coach is back on the screen again in a different segment, not with Team Spirit. And not even in a confrontation here. She basically says, you know, hey, you know, I thought you did good out there. And ask her, does she want any coach tips? And Glitter's like, yeah, sure. Like, well, you celebrated too soon. Now, any idiot could see that, but this is the coach tip. You know, I guess in WoW's universe, it's a mastermind stroke, a stroke of genius, that she realized that, hey, you didn't pay attention to what you were doing in the ring. You got beat. So she tells her that, and Glitter's like, yeah, thanks, Coach. So is this the beginning of a friendship? Is this forming something that is supposed to go forth and create a new team? We will see. Time will tell. The next match, or the next segment, excuse me, Samantha Smart. She comes out to the ring and cuts a promo. She is essentially booking a match between her own team members. Now, why she's doing this, I don't know. I can understand the match between Class Bison and G.I. Jane because they had a segment that led us to believe that there was problems between the two of them. The problem with that segment and this leading into this match, however, is that there are two other people who weren't involved in it. The disciplinarian wasn't involved in that segment, so why is she in this? Neither was Samantha Smart involved with that, so why is she bothering? Up until this point, it's just been two people, Classmaster and G.I. Jane. But here is like this idea came from Samantha Smart. And that's the other thing. It's like G.I. Jane walked off in that segment. It's like, well, we'll see who's the one in charge or whatever she said. So it comes off, if you're basing on that last segment a week or two ago, that this is something that she wanted to do. But you look at this and it's coming off like Samantha Smart just decided for whatever reason that we need to find out who's the best of my team. So we're going to find our number two. Which is another thing. I was like, why are they wrestling to be second place? For what reason does that make any sort of sense? You're wrestling to be number two. And for a losing team at that. Like the team's superior IQ has not had a stellar performance under any circumstances. They've just lost and they've lost and they've lost and they've lost. I don't know if I want to be the head honcho of a losing franchise. I certainly don't want to be number two of a losing franchise, but this is where they are, and that was the motivation, and it seemingly came from nowhere. If anything, the disciplinarian should have just been handed that title. She's been with her for almost 10 years. But who am I to look in the face of logic? So Smart comes out. She essentially books a match with her own team members. And this is supposed to determine the second in command. And this is kind of oversold for me. And this was a blow up that came from nowhere. It was, I guess, a means to an end to kick off the match, but it wasn't a good means. So we get to the match, which was seamless from this promo segment. The disciplinarian facing off against the Classmaster, facing off against G.I. Jane. And Samantha Smart goes and sits in the commentating table, which gives David McClain the chance to, hey, you got into the ring once. You think you want to do it again? You know, he brings up the one time that Samantha Smart was in the ring at any point in a while, which was during the unaired season. That's another thing. They're not consistent with that. Sometimes they have these moments where they bring up stuff and acknowledge the unaired season, such as Jesse Jones was once part of the tag team championships. They said that a couple of months back. But then at the same time, they completely ignore who she was with because the Dixie Darlings are not there. They acknowledge certain other matches and outcomes like Princess Ozzy being a part of the Dark Side with Siren and Holiday and being under their sway. But then they don't acknowledge that Tessa Blanchard won the WOW Championship and that they just handed it back to the Beast. They're inconsistent with what they choose to acknowledge off of that unair season and not. I mean, at this point, I would say either just incorporate the season into being full canon or just ignore it altogether. But don't pick and choose which ones that you like and which ones you don't. So they called this a leader of the pack match, even though they won't be leading anything. They'll be second to Samantha Smart should they win. This is it's a triple threat with a different name. And it largely positioned G.I. Jane as the babyface. Just getting to the end of it, G.I. Jane won. G.I. Jane won the match. She, like I said, she was largely positioned as the babyface in this. So it's not a full heel versus heel versus heel match, even though they all came in that way. The way the match was structured somewhat put Jane in the sympathetic babyface role. And then I think the fans, some of them started cheering for G.I. Jane, you know, just following that. Classmaster is, in the WoW universe, a waste of space. And again, in a kayfabe universe, I don't know why Samantha Smart would think that this was a good idea. Particularly when Classmaster has lost every single time that she's been in the ring. Why would she even be in the running to be the leader of the group? If we're basing it off of who is, you know, the best wrestler amongst the pack. Because clearly it ain't her. The disciplinarian is the clear and obvious vet in this match. For those who don't know or may have forgotten, she is a Diamonds Division champion out of Reality of Wrestling, or former Diamonds Division champion, trained by Booker T. And has done really well. I'm surprised that she has not attempted to go to some other wrestling organizations. I mean, she seems very content with WoW, and she does not appear to be putting herself out there on the indies all that much anymore. It's like, it's WoW or nothing. But that's beside the point. So getting to the end, the disciplinarian hits G.I. Jane with a sit-out gourd buster. The classmaster comes in and breaks up the pin. The disciplinarian gets her in a sleeper hold, which she's able to break free of, the classmaster is. Yeah, remember, classmaster is nominally larger than most of the women on that roster. She's certainly taller. When Jane comes charging in to hit the classmaster, classmaster gets out of the way and she nails the disciplinarian. Same thing happens in the reverse. Classmaster tries to charge in on G.I. Jane, and then she hits the disciplinarian. And so it turns into, it's just the two of us now, because she rolls out of the ring. Jane is on the opposite side of the ring. She's on the second rope. Classmaster sees her. She's like, I'm going to get you. And then she comes up and catches a boot and then gets a tornado DDT from the second rope. She cartwheels the impact of that DDT across the ring, which was a little bit impressive. I mean, I do understand that these rings are much smaller than the standard ring. It's like a custom-made ring to be, the ropes are lower and the space within the ropes are smaller than what you would have in your TNAs, MLWs, WOW, NWA, so on and so forth. But G.I. Jane wins following that tornado DDT off of the second rope. She pins the Classmaster. Surprise, surprise. Classmaster takes another loss. And then at the end of the match, both the disciplinarian and the Classmaster decide that, well, we're going to jump her. And Samantha Smart's on the microphone and she's rooting this on. They both hit her from behind. They shoot her off into the rope. She ducks underneath their clothesline and nails them both with clotheslines of her own. Down they go, the disciplinarian and the classmaster, leaving G.I. Jane to stand triumphant by herself. I don't know what is the purpose of this match served. I really don't. Because now I can't imagine that G.I. Jane is going to be the leader of the group. If she is, it was going to take some serious explanation as to why she's still part of this group for two people that just decide to attack her. But stranger things have happened in wrestling, if I'm going to be fair. So the question here is Jane a babyface now? Is that where we're going? This did not present like there was a plan by Smart in place at all. It was just, we're going to have a match with my three wrestlers and discover who's in charge underneath me. So, I don't know. Classmaster continues a losing streak. Next segment, Miami's Sweet Heat cut a promo on the Mother Truckers. They call out the Mother Truckers. And I couldn't get the words out, but they call them out. Basically saying that the only reason that they're there is because of Miami Sweet Heat and the Fabulous Four, which they show B-roll of their car breaking down. This is, you know, the beginning of the last season, which I thought was a just absurd premise. But they show the clips of their car breaking down and them giving them free tickets to WOW. And that was enough for them to forego payment and take their car anywhere they wanted to go. And they had these front row tickets. Then they proceeded to jump over the rail and just join into the match. And from that point on, Dave McLean has given them a job, and they've been wrestling in WOW ever since. So in their universe, Miami Sweet, he is responsible for the Mother Truckers being there. And this all seems like, A, they are acknowledging that, they didn't so much say that our title match has been taken away, but they're basically getting that Dave McLean, you're in our way, which is what they always say when bad decisions are. It's always Dave McLean. So then they move that over to the Mother Truckers. They start going off on them. And it seems like this is heading towards a Truckers Heat angle and or feud. The Truckers are on the other half of this promo, and they keep referring to Sweet Heat as using the mirrors when it was actually Vicky Lynn and Penelope Pink. Miami Sweet Heat earlier said that, you know, well, we couldn't help that we used the mirrors. Again, it wasn't them, Penelope Pink and Vicky Lynn McCoy. And I said it then, I don't even know how those mirrors are supposed to knock somebody out, but they do. They're magical mirrors. Impact and you go out cold for minutes at a time, which is basically what happened. They got knocked out and they just stayed out for like 10 minutes. It felt like, anyway. But the Truckers are complaining about they keep using the mirrors, and they call for another no DQ match. We've had enough of these, but they're calling for another one. And I'm sure they're going to try to find some way to make this one more deadly and more important than the last. So we have a Mother Truckers Miami Sweet Heat match to get ready for. I cannot wait. I guess. The next segment, the Tonga Twins cut a pointless promo at the bottom of the steps. I didn't understand it. They're just like yelling some stuff. And I had no idea where they were going with that. It just happens to be that they're yelling and screaming before the match. Maybe it's a motivation thing. I don't know. But this is the point that we're getting to where I was like, now I have something I have to discuss with you. So after shouting nonsense at the bottom of the WOW steps and then marching up to go into the arena to take on the Last Call, Last Call is already in the ring. The Tonga Twins get in there and they just charge right in. Now, that was a little bit of difference between what they normally have out of their matches and, you know, where they are right now. David McLean, at some point in this show, is like, you've never seen Last Call dominated like this. Well, I guess we haven't, except for the last time that we saw Last Call dominated like that by the Tonga Twins. So, I have no idea why this match ended the way that it did. And I think that is the bigger story in this. Other than they had something to cover up. And I don't mean that in a, you know, horrible way. I'm just saying The only way that the only reason that you would have to do what they did is to cover up something. So what wound up happening is you had a match that carried on, you know, pretty standard. Then you get to the end. And I would say in the last 30 seconds of it, we'll go that far. The last 30 seconds or so, there is a cut that is made in the match to somewhat cover up was taking place. Whatever that happens to be, because I don't know. I wasn't there, and I haven't seen any fan footage or anything like that. So, getting towards the end of the match, what you have happen is Del Rey is in there being beaten up by both of the twins, because I'm not going through the entirety of it. And when they get her beaten with these dual super kicks, she goes down. Wrecking Ball comes in and just charges with her hands up like a crazy person. And then she gets caught with what used to be the Tongan's finish, the Tongan drop along with the neck breaker combo. But now, this is where it starts to change. When you see that, they immediately cut to fan reaction, right? And if you're listening to this right now, you will have to go with the description. If you're on YouTube, you should be able to see what I'm talking about. So they immediately go to fan reaction after hitting Wrecking Ball with their finish. They go to fan reaction, come back, and this is where people's like, this looks like the exact same finish as they had last time. And it was. This was not just a copy and paste of the previous match. This is the previous match. There is no we repeated the finish. This is the footage of the previous match. If you're looking at this on YouTube, what you will be seeing are two side-by-side video blocks of the match that took place before and the match that we're talking now. The cut to the audience is to cover the jump from one thing to the next. Fortunately for them to do this, they had all the elements in place. They got twins in the ring, so you could barely tell them apart. Last Call is pretty much wearing the same outfits that, you know, they had the previous time. The referee is the same. And all of this works in their favor. The problem became is that nothing changed. And it's not like I'm the only person that noticed it. I might be the only person that noticed that this isn't just them repeating the finish that is actually the same thing. But I'm not the only person that knows that. There's people that was like, well, the ending looks exactly like the previous match. And that's what it was. They took Reina Del Rey getting crunked back up, standing up, taking the Tongan spike slash spear combination, and that being the finish, and then the other twin going to sitting in front of the other girl, Wrecking Ball, to stop her from coming in. And again, this is not them repeating the finish. This is the footage. This is the exact same thing. The reason that I put it up on this review is so that you can look and see where I'm talking about. So, the first element of that is that there's a near impossibility for you to duplicate everything that you did from start to finish perfectly. And that's what they did. They duplicated everything. But we know that that's not a duplication. And if you're looking at it, I'm going to take a look at myself. I have the dates, the episode, and the footage there for you to see. And what you're going to see in that is the background for the episode 73 footage change. If you look at the and you may have to look at it on the loop a couple of more times to get what I'm saying. If you look at the front row of the episode 63 footage and the episode 73 footage, there's a guy that's on the front row with like a black t-shirt. He's front and center, and then he's standing next to like two other guys. When you look at the past footage, it's the girls from SCU sitting on the front row. What I will say is that the edit was pretty smooth because they took a camera angle that you would not be able to see that, by and large. They just, you know, they went to a different angle, kept it at a close-up. They didn't repeat what they did on the first one completely. They kept it at a close-up so that you wouldn't be able to tell just at a glance. And there's not a lot of footage or a lot of shots on the crowd to begin with. I just happened to notice that. So I'm not saying that they did anything wrong here, but this is where they are. They have essentially just recycled old footage to accommodate a new thing. That is an old Hollywood trope. That's something that used to happen dating back to when Hollywood was created. You know, you go back to the 30s and you look at some of those film shorts. You know, I used the Three Stooges as an example earlier in the show. But honestly, that's probably one of the better examples because you had a lot of one of their shorts that they did for, I think it was Columbia. And then they recycled the premise. And in some cases, particularly when they got to Shemp, they started recycling footage. When he had his stroke, they started using body doubles and recycling footage again. And then they had, you know, just flat out scenes where they would take the bulk of the short and then cut in new pieces with the remaining members and the new member of the group so that they would get a whole new episode out. So I said all that to say this. I'm sure that, you know, Three Stooges history is not what you tune in here for. But I said all that to say is that this type of thing is not uncommon in a Hollywood scenario. It is uncommon in wrestling. But I don't think WOW treats their show like just a pure wrestling show. And they treat it like a TV show and that this is acceptable. I would have, depending on the reasons why, it's hard for me to say what I would have done, honestly, or what I was about to say, is I would have had them do it over. But it's hard for me to say that without knowing the reasons that they gave it up to begin with. And I can only think of really like one of two reasons that they would have just wiped out the ending, because clearly the match was shot. They shot this match. They chopped off the ending. So what reasons would they have to do that? The first thing I thought of, and probably more unlikely, is that the finish was bad. Meaning that they had something that took place on there that was so egregious, or it just, you know, it made them look less than. And rather than to air footage that would, you know, the finish messed up, or somebody slipped, or somebody connected, or it just made the match look bad overall, then they'd probably swap it out. Put this in, take that out. I think that's pretty far-fetched because for whatever things I may think about the matches of the Tonga Twins and Last Call, they have had work together. And I don't think that suddenly they're just going to lose the chemistry of how to operate with each other. It's not like they're moving at 90 miles an hour in there. They're all pretty slow and plodding, so I don't think that that would be the case. The more likely scenario is that the finish went in the wrong narrative direction. And by that, I mean, and I don't know if this is the scenario, but I'm just throwing something out there. By that, I mean, let's just say Last Call won. They win the match and they win the championships. Well, we already know that Wrecking Ball has announced her departure from WOW. She's already said, and I'm, you know, I've given my notice. Thank you to WOW, et cetera. So you can read all of that on her Instagram. So if they shot all of these and then at the end of it, she's like, you know, I don't think I'm going to hang around. That would facilitate, you know, that would necessitate you having to do something with this. Now, I would prefer that they try to do something a little bit, you know, more specific rather than just having the match just for the sake of having the match. They didn't need it anyway. They could have shot, or at least I would assume they could have shot something to work Wrecking Ball out of the company and just move her on, because as far as we know, for the foreseeable future, she's not going to be back. But this is, I have to give credit. It was pretty smooth how they did it. If it didn't look exactly the same, this would not be a problem. The issue is that it does look exactly the same. So it's like, this can't be right. And so that's why I had to go in and I had to take a look at it and like, all right, let me see what this is and what did they do. And there it is, folks. It's them taking the finish of the match that took place 10 weeks ago and just applying it to this. I mean, I guess bravo. I don't know. But to the persons that posted, like, this looks the same, they did this in the previous match, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, this is the previous match. They didn't do anything. This is the previous match. So that it was everything. That is the full review. I wish I could have caught that from the beginning. And again, I don't understand what the grudge or the anger that the Tonga Twins have, other than the fact that Last Call challenged them again. But it seems like an unnecessary anger. And the other thing that got me in here is that, which is why I was asking, did I miss something? Nigel at some point in the match says, I can't believe that Last Call would stoop so low to get a title match or something thereof. Like, what did they do that they stooped so low? They came out and challenged them and they accepted. So I don't understand. I was like, something is missing out of this. There's something that should have taken place in this episode on this show that just didn't air. That would assumably put the pieces together, but I can't tell because it's cut out. And I'm probably one of the few people out there that's even paying attention to little nitpicky things like that. And I know WOW depends on his fans not paying attention. I have just accepted that. They depend on their fans not having that kind of long-term memory to their storytelling. They depend on their fans forgetting stuff that they saw so they could just do the next thing. And they also just edit and create angles with impunity, whether it makes sense or not. But that was the way it was. And I will reiterate, if there's something that took place on that show that I am not aware of, please, please, please let me know. And on that note, that is going to close the review of this episode. It wasn't a task to get through this, but it wasn't great either. This is part of the problem that you have when you do marathon tapings. I mean, there's just no way around that. This is the best of that, and they should have some better fail safes in line, or at least try to create some better fail safes, because this always happens with them. The tournament's always terrible because they switch and swap. They don't stick to any rules. And the further along they go within their taping schedule of episodes, the more likely it is that you start getting holes punched in the angles and storylines like this. It starts to make less and less sense. Now, they haven't done anything that has been egregiously bad. They have not gotten anybody to a point where the fans like, oh, this is some bull. I can't believe it. So, you know, they're still appeasing their personal fan base. But I do think, honestly, that they need to start addressing or keeping an eye out, at least, for trying to get this to be a smoother ride with continuity and not just make up stuff on the spot or try to explain it away in some ridiculous fashion. Like, oh, well, the tournament's fluid, so that's why we're able to do this, that. No, it's just you didn't pick enough people. That could have been easily avoided if you just picked one more team to put in that tournament. You wouldn't even be having this problem. Or the debate about it being fluid or not. Like I said, a fluid tournament is not a tournament. It's just matches. And the trophy seems like it's taking a back seat to personal issues right now anyway. If we're going to be completely honest. Team spirit seems like they developed some problems with the addition of a new member being thrown in there, that being who is that? Sasha Sparks. IQ Superior just had a triple threat match to determine who's going to be their number two. Exile has clear-cut problems that they've talked about. The Mighty Mites, it doesn't matter because they got put into it twice. They were only there to job out to the next team. And I guess the only ones that have any sort of semblance of control, continuity, teamwork, or what have you, seems to be the Brat Pack, which I'm not sure about them yet because I don't know what they're going to do with Jay Boogie. I don't know if she's going to remain a babyface in a group of heels or are the heels going to go babyface. So you have that, and then you have Las Banditas, who I just said they won, but it didn't seem like they had any particular goal. They just started talking about this is what we deserve, we're the best, and et cetera, et cetera. So there it was, the leader of the pack in full review on this edition of the Rights and Wrongs of Pro Wrestling Podcast. Of course, I want to thank you for tuning in and listening to the program. If you have things that you agree with, please leave below. If you have things that you don't agree with, please leave it below. I love to read it. Hopefully, this trios tournament, the tag titles, and all this other stuff will straighten itself out. And I say hopefully. I don't have a lot of faith in that, but they might. They might turn around like, oh, well, you know, we're going to do this, that, and change the creative direction. It could happen. I don't perceive it happening, but it could happen. But in the interim of that, as we wait to see whether they do good, bad, or the other, I will put this show into its hibernation, into a sleep. Until the next time, which is coming up in like a day or two, the next time that I can sit down and go over a while and talk about it's good, it's bad, it's ugly. Thank you again for tuning in for this. And as always, I will leave you by saying that this is Mr. Green saying that this is Mr. Green saying so long, and we'll see you on the next go round. Subscribe, like, and share, guys. Take care, and we'll see you on the next go round.
Thank you for listening to the WPN's Rights and Wrongs of Pro Wrestling. If you have questions or comments, please contact us via our Facebook or our YouTube channel at the Women's Pro Wrestling Network. If you're new to the WPN, feel free to subscribe to our channel and like our page. We appreciate your support. Thank you again for listening.